So,
Welcome to this 232nd edition of Europe Calling. My name is Maximilian Fries. I'm managing director of Europe Calling. As always, I will moderate tonight's discussions. I wish to extend a particularly warm welcome to tonight's discussions, which I'm going to introduce to you in a minute. We're going to speak English and German. We have two wonderful interpreters, and under the little globe in the control panel, you can choose your language. Now I'm speaking in German. As always, at Europe Calling, you can ask questions and write questions suggested by others. For this, we will use Slido today. The link will soon be indicated in the chat. Please do ask your questions there and write those posed by others. With over 500 registered participants, Slido is the only way to allow us to ask the questions you are really interested in. As always, Europe Calling is registered and will be posted on YouTube and as a podcast. Please don't forget this when asking your questions. These were already all the technical announcements I had to make. I'm very pleased when after the weekend, the team of Daniel Freund approached me and suggested we organize a webinar on the Pride in Budapest. And I was really thankful that very spontaneous three more guests agreed to participate, because many of us have heard about it in Germany, but also in Europe. In Budapest, something important happened that was much more than only LGBTQI plus people. And it was in the headlines on Monday, also in the German press. But now, in the meantime, everything seems to be forgotten again, because as we will hear, the thing continues, and the problem is how can we preserve this momentum and prevent that it's that how can we how so that we can keep it in the summer. I'm glad that we can discuss the topic with a lot of wonderful guests. First guest, to whom I will give the floor soon, Victoria Radvani, the director of the Budapest Pride, and he has organized as in a leading role the Budapest Pride. You have about 4 minutes time, and then later on we will have questions and answers. Victoria, it's nice to be that you are with us. You have the floor.
Thank you, everyone. And I would like to thank you for the opportunity to be able to be here and present to you. I just need to highlight that I'm extremely, extremely tired. So if I'm not the most precise at all times, please forgive me. But we still haven't had a little bit of time to rest since the Pride happened. So what happened on Saturday in Budapest was truly a historical moment. We on the spot, we told the press that we have around 200,000 participants. Now the calculations vary between 250,000 and 450,000. So I think we will settle somewhere in the middle to be, you know, to be precise with our calculations. But this is the largest demonstration, the largest freedom march that has happened since 1989, maybe sooner. We are still in the process of processing of what happened. And I would like just to highlight a few important things about what happened to you. And the first and most important takeaway and what I want to leave with you is that we need to keep the pressure on the European Commission. Hundreds of thousands of people in Hungary did their job by showing up to this march, you know, regardless of the brand, regardless of the threat from the authorities, the threat from the police. Hungarian people chose freedom, and we need the European Commission to do its job. We need interim measures to suspend this Pride ban right now. Criminal investigations already started on the mayor of Budapest, and we can expect more fines and criminal investigations starting from the police. We don't know yet how it is going to unfold, but it is crucial that the institutions of the European Union don't abandon the Hungarian people, because we joined the EU in this firm belief in EU values. Hungarians still very much trust the institutions of the European Union. Hungarians think these institutions are fair and unbiased, and there is a big fear if the European Commission keeps abandoning this cause and only does tweets and videos, then the Hungarian people who stood up against authoritarianism will lose faith in EU institutions. And I think at this, you know, point and time in history, we cannot afford to do that. another point of reflection about what happened in Budapest, that yes, absolutely, it was way more than just about LGBTQ rights. It was about freedom of assembly, it was about fundamental rights. But we have to remember that this could not have happened without the LGBTQ community. In the past 5 years, the prime minister and the governing party did everything in their power to crack down on this community, to make us leave our country or leave activism or just completely, crumble under the pressure. They took away our rights for legal gender recognition, for adoption. They censored discussing LGBTQ topics in the media and schools. And still the community didn't give up. We didn't let them to silence us, and we didn't let them to discourage us from standing up for our rights. So when the prime minister announced that the Pride March is going to be banned, our response was that it is not going to be banned. And we self-organized. The LGBTQ movement in Hungary is stronger than ever because we kept together, we exercised active solidarity, we self-organized, and then we promoted these values and these rights in a way that the majority could join us and the majority could stand with us. Does every single participant support every single LGBTQ cause? Of course not, but it is a very important first step. And it is very important to remember that it was the LGBTQ community who organized the Pride March. This whole huge turnout couldn't have happened without an existing Pride March. And we need our allies more than ever, because we can put our fair share in this fight, and you know that we will fight and we will not give up. But we need also elected decision makers and representatives to keep the pressure on the commission, because if the Pride ban is not lifted, more criminal proceedings and fines will come. And also it cannot be, up to your mayor's good graces if you can exercise your fundamental rights or not. It should be an absolutely given to every EU citizen in this union. So this is my message that I would like to leave with you. And if you have any questions to me, I am very, very happy to answer that. Thank you so much.
And also like to thank you on behalf of everyone that you organized this and opposed it. I mean, there's many of you everywhere in the world, and it's important everywhere in the world, because the rights of the queer community are under pressure everywhere. So it's great that you stand for this. You have my respect. And now, Akos Hatházy, independent member of the Hungarian parliament. He's well known for his fight against Orbán's corruption. And just like Victoria said, he's working in the area of basic human rights, freedom, and the fight against corruption. Akos, we are looking forward to your views on what happened this weekend and what might follow up on this. Well, it was really such an important event. It was such an experience. And Orban did not expect it at all. So that's important too. But on the other hand, that's not enough to be completely optimistic, even if it was the largest protest of the past decades in our country. Over the past months and weeks, I've said it often and many times. If this Pride law, so-called Pride law, will be adopted, then for Orban, it didn't matter so much if the Pride would take place or not. That wasn't the matter. He wanted to ban it. Neither was it so important for him how many people would participate, even if he didn't expect this many participants. That was unexpected, for sure. But for Orban, the pride in and of itself wasn't the essential thing, but the next protests, the future protests, which then will be banned as well. The protests will be would be directly against the power after election fraud, because we are living with a hybrid regime. It's not a democracy in Hungary, and just like with every hybrid regime, in every autocracy, that's a typical feature, that those who are in power do not want to let go of that power. So we can expect election fraud that will take place, and then there will be protests. And they will only be dangerous for the regime if many people participate and if they keep protesting, just like we've seen it in Serbia or in Ukraine back during the Maidan revolution. So Orban had to act. That's why he adopted this pride law. It wasn't just against the pride, it was just to set a precedent to be able to ban protests. And so now it was admissible to use the Chinese face recognition software against opposition, against protesters. So that the fact that so many people came despite the ban, the threats, and that's a great result, and the Hungarian opposition can be very proud, but the law still stands, and we don't know yet whether many people will be detained because of this, or will have sanctions because of this. But I'm pretty sure that the sanctions are already in preparation. We know that investigations are being conducted against the organizers. The police already said, so they'll investigate the mayor and or maybe also Victoria. So I'm almost certain that thousands or ten thousands of Hungarian people will be sanctioned after this. So Victoria said that the Hungarian people have done their homework. I would say that we've done the first part of our homework. But that is no reason to accept this law. We have to keep standing against this law and working against it, and of course the EU Commission and the EU Parliament have to continue to have a very careful eye on this techno-fascist law with the Chinese facial recognition. And don't forget that it still stands and it will still be a support for this regime. Thank you, Akos. I'm sure we'll talk about that topic as well, the topic of the Pride Law, facial recognition, and we can also talk about the role of the police. I've heard different news, so the police seem to have been quite supportive during the protest, but now the opposite is the case, so maybe we could talk about that in a moment. But I would like to also mention what you said at the end, that the EU Commission should continue to put pressure on Orban. The question is, are they putting enough pressure? And then Naagi, she's the is president of the Union of European Federalists in Hungary and also a councillor in Budapest, Esther Nagy. So we're looking forward to what you have to say.
Thank you so much for organizing this, and I'm so grateful to you that you wanted to do this follow-up. And I want to pick on this facial recognition software and these endeavors from the government to intimidate the people, because that is basically the biggest thing to refrain people from activism, that people should rather be afraid. They shouldn't like anything on Facebook, or they shouldn't go to demonstrate, because otherwise they will be they will get a fine from the police, or they will have some they will get in trouble. And the very interesting thing is that They, for example, when there were the teachers' demonstrations, then they fired only a couple of teachers in order to show example, and then all the other teachers were intimidated. So it worked really well, and also it was interesting that the day before the Pride in Club Radio, there was a lawyer who gave advice what to do when you go to demonstrate. Like there was an advice that you shouldn't take a check from the police and sign anything, or you shouldn't admit that you did something wrong. And there were many people who actually put on sunglasses or headscarves in order to stop the facial recognition software working. And but I think that I was so proud of being Hungarian in that moment, because in simply the amount of the people that were there, I think it was a big impediment for the authorities, because it was absolutely ridiculous. You put the photo of Erzsébet híd, of the Erzsébet bridge, in your invitation, and this facial recognition machine stood opposite the big crowd. And for me, I think there is no such technology that it could pick up every single face. But I know that we have to be, we have to stay alert, and we have to, we cannot be, you know, quiet about it. But also many several civil organizations offered help, like legal help, if somebody would get a notice from the police that they did some, because this is nothing wrong that we did, because we wanted to stand up for our opinion. And another factor why I'm really proud of my fellow countrymen, that this was a solidarity march, because this is something that we have to practice, that to be solidarity with other groups. And the government has always tried to wash together LGBTQ community with pedophilia. It's like, you know, migration is terrorism. You know, that there are these populist ideas, and people didn't stand up for this. And you have to know that this LGBTQ topic is a little bit controversial in Hungary, and also the biggest opposition party leader, Péter Magyar, didn't dare to say anything about it in advance. He went on holidays, actually, because he was afraid that the bigger masses of Hungarians wouldn't like if he says something positive. But when he saw that there was this big crowd, then he also had a positive comment about it. So I think this was really a turning point in our feeling of solidarity on one hand, and on the other hand, to break the apathy of the people, because this is what is serving the most the Orbán regime, when people don't dare to do anything, and when people think that no matter what we do, nothing will happen. And I would like to join also Victoria and Ákos in asking that the EU should still remain with us. And I'm so grateful to Danielle and all the other European members of the European Parliament, because it was for me a really comforting feeling that we were together in this, and you were there with us. And I'm really so grateful for that. So that's what I would give from my perspective. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Vielen Dank dir. Und du hast Daniel schon angesprochen. Daniel Freund, Europa.
And now Daniel Freund, your friend and MEP for the Greens. And who, all those who know him know that he's one of the strongest voices against Orbán. He is in the intergroup in the European Parliament against corruption, a good friend of mine. And he was in Budapest, was with us in the buses, and it's fantastic that you suggested that we have this webinar today, and I'm very anxious to hear what you have to say on these things. Thank you, Max. Thank you all. Thank you all for participating. It was really quite an experience last weekend in Budapest, that's true. And now you could say, well, that was a huge protest.
Riesenprotest.
I don't know exactly how many they were. We don't know it yet, as Victoria said, but this showed that the freedom of assembly is still working in Hungary, that everything is still okay. Well, I think we're just about to realize that that is not the case. From the outset, it was clear for us that if you can ban the pride in Budapest, it means that this is something which concerns everybody, not only the Hungarians or Hungary. It concerns everybody in Europe. It's not a domestic affair, as Orban tried to phrase it. He tried to say it's a Hungarian problem, but that is not true. We have the EU treaties, we have the European Charter of Fundamental Rights, we have the right, the freedom of assembly, of opinion, of speech, to live the way you want. This is a European fundamental right that is valid for all Europeans ever in the European Union. And if these rights are not respected, they are violated everywhere. So it's really a matter that is important for all Europeans, and we have to defend these rights. And that's why I'm proud that about 70 members of the European Parliament were there, many from the national parliaments, ministers, mayors, and so on and so forth. The Green mayor, on the day before the Pride, gave a reception, and 600 international supporters were there. And I think that really made a difference, because thanks to that, we could show in the end that international and European attention is focused on Budapest. I think Victoria, you, and all the others, and the mayor, I think it helped you all not to give up and to fight your fight through. That it could be done is great. There is also a video by von der Leyen shortly before the Pride, who insisted that these fundamental rights exist, that she is on the side of the queer community, not only during the Pride. And I know many persons, especially queer people, who were close to tears when they heard that. And therefore, it's important in such a moment to send such a message. But for me, this cannot be everything. Instagram videos cannot be all that is done. We need something more concrete. We have the change, the amendments to the Hungarian law and the constitution, and what they've done there is illegal. It's not in compliance with European law. That's why we need an infringement procedure by the European Union. Especially now, when they bring individual participants to court. This is very perfidious that the first person against whom proceedings are instituted comes from has a student background or is a student, which means that she doesn't have a lot of money, has no diplomatic immunity. And here the Commission has to use all the possibilities of European law. And I have to say, I don't quite understand why still money flows to Hungary. We've also sent a letter as MEPs. Akos, I think, can cite a lot of examples. On Friday, for example, we were at a castle which has been renovated with 5 million euros from the European Union, but then the whole thing will be privatized and the castle will be handed over to Orban faithfuls. So this shows how the thing functions in Hungary, how EU money is regularly stolen in Hungary. So we have to do something now. For a long time, we've been insisting that Hungary is stripped of its right to vote, that Hungary shouldn't have the right to vote in the council anymore. And last Friday, we saw it, what it means, the umpteenth time that Orban vetoed something. And And that was not in order to defend the core interests of Hungary or to protect the country's interests. No, it was just to be something special or to blackmail Europeans so that they give him more money. Or he does it in the service of the Kremlin in order to prevent or to to block sanctions, and this is not possible. We cannot accept it. I mean, Orbán has been in power for 15 years, but for the first time in these 50 years, in the polls, he's not ranking first, but is clearly behind. And I have sent the fragrance of change, the wind of change. And it's something you can feel there in Hungary. When you talk to people, you can see that many people have enough now. And this is maybe also the positive thing about this huge event last weekend, that maybe it's the beginning of the end of this regime or of Viktor Orban. That's would be at least my hope. And we have to just increase our efforts in our work. In April, there will be elections, and I would really hope that the corruption and the violating of EU law will then have an end and that there will be change. Thank you very much. I think we've been well briefed on what happened. We have now another half an hour for questions, and what I'm aiming at is what can everybody do in Europe, everywhere, in order to A, be solidary with all those who are victims of repression now, but then at a more general level, what does it mean for pride in other locations, what has happened, and what about the solidarity with the LGBTQ community? This would be my final question, but there are also questions our guests have already posed, and the first question goes back to UNAM, and I read it. A lot of people were very brave in Hungary. Can't you take away the right to vote completely, Orbán, in the EU? Well, Daniel, you've already been talking about it, but it's something which is repeating itself time and again, and stripping Orbán of his vote, of his right to vote. Well, this is something which has been a discussion topic for a long time. And what about you? Have you been reading on this topic a lot lately, and at the European level, do you think that there is movement at all? I mean, since 2019, you have been a member of the European Parliament. Have anything happened, or has there been movement? Because my impression is that not very much. Well, let's say yes, something has happened indeed compared to 2019. When the European Parliament had just initiated Article 7 procedures, but nothing really had happened. And now 18 billion euros are held back. And this shows some effect. More than 1 billion euro is not only retained, but completely taken away from Hungary. And if you consider what this means, how many schools could have been built in Hungary with this money, how many fast internet cables could have been built in Hungary with this money, well, and then you realize that the pressure is much higher now than it was 2019. And you really see how bad the economic performance is of this government. I mean, don't forget when Hungary came, when Orbán came to power, Hungary per person was the richest of the new member countries in the EU, but now things have changed. Many countries are now richer than Europe, and this is also because of corruption, and I think the people realize that. And then the right to vote, well, this depends on the political will. Will the member states of the European Union be ready to go that step? I think so far it's still difficult, because most people just concentrate on the short term, the 18th sanction packet, which we want to put through, and that makes people dependable on Orbán, and they can blackmail them. But this has to change. This should be our objective, and we're all responsible and have to put pressure on our governance so that they do the right thing. And what about you, Esther? How do you see that?
Yes, if I want, if I just a couple of sentences, I think that there is a huge problem. On the other hand, with the free the independent media outlets and civil society, because now I'm in France at the UEF France event, and I see that the ministry is supporting them, the local government, and you know that they get support from everyone, like the civil society in Hungary. They don't get any support. They get only repression from their government, and including independent media. And now after the USAID was cut, also it meant a big cut for independent think tanks, media, and civil organizations. And I know that there is this intergovernmental nature of EU funds distribution, and this is, I think, also a little bit problematic. But I know that there are structural problems, why it cannot be changed. But I just wanted to highlight the importance of the need on the other side, you know, of the people who try to do something in Hungary. And after this pride, also Orbán cannot say any longer that Hungarians are behind him.
And this is a further question which I would like to put to Victoria, the other top question here. First of all, we felicitate you for your success, but in the Hungarian media, it's Cornelia who asked the question, how reacted the Hungarian media? We've heard a lot about the European media, but how was the reaction in Hungary?
So I'm sorry, the interpretation was a bit wobbly here and there. So you're asking about the local media's reaction, not on the Pride March,
The reactions from the people, but it was, I think everybody was overwhelmed. But I give the word to Victoria. Sorry, I just wanted to help.
Thank you. So yes, the majority of the feedbacks we received was that finally I was proud to be Hungarian again. And I think this was something that many haven't felt in quite a while. Hungary is usually depicted in international media in two ways. Either look at this fascist country, or, oh, poor Hungarians, they have this horrible leader, we have to be sorry for them. None of them feels, you know, especially good. And this is a moment, and we received many letters, especially from people who attended Pride for the first time, that it made them feel proud for standing up for themselves, standing up together, and experience doing this on such a big community level that maybe they experienced this in the first time for their lives. So my hope for the Hungarian public to take away from this, besides being a bit more open and a bit more accepting towards the LGBTQ community, and not just towards those in the community who, you know, wear nice suits and behave in a very proper way, but for the whole community, was also to learn that we don't have to comply with authoritarian laws if there are many of us. And this is something that many of us asking, or we are being asked from the United States, from many other countries, where vulnerable communities are fearful for their fundamental rights, for their safety, for their basic freedoms, is that compliance is usually the biggest aid for the authoritarian leaders. And I'm just going to point to the fact that 95% of corporate sponsors has left Budapest Pride. Sponsors that have been with us for many, many years. When the first wind of this ban came, corporations said, no, thank you. And this is something that we've seen in the United States. Companies who have been very, very big advocates for diversity and inclusion suddenly started donating for the Trump inauguration celebration. So this type of compliance is something that is extremely helpful for authoritarian leaders, and I'm just very proud of the people who said otherwise.
And that's a very interesting point you make, because I'm actually reading, I had to, that's what was down in my suitcase, actually reading this book right now, which is, I can very much recommend, which is on civil resistance, which exactly was that, right? And one of the wonderful points, and I will put it in the chat later, is that the authors then figure nonviolent protest always works. You know, there are two really main points when that actually works and you get rid of the autocrat. Is one, you get your movement broad enough and big enough, so you're not excluding anyone, but you're including a lot of people, and you feel like, you know, this is normality now, and this is something you describe. And the other one is the police, and we're gonna and the security forces and stuff like that. I'm gonna do that in the second question. But the first question I want to ask Victoria, was there any specific strategy that you used as LGBTIQ community in order to have a broader appeal? Because, you know, that's not always easy. This is like everyone who's part of a movement knows how difficult it sometimes is to kind of to embrace more people that might disagree with, you know, a decent amount of things you believe in. And so how was there any specific strategy used?
So much. I'm gonna try to be very concise. So, firstly, we needed to strengthen the group, like the core organizer group, because we knew that it's the biggest strain is going to be on us, and we had to strengthen our like closest alliances with, you know, other human rights NGOs and activist groups, because we know that the tactic from Putin or even from like Turkey was to tire activists out, and this was something we were very conscious about. For example, this so-called transparency law, I don't know, everybody has a different name for it, but you know which law I'm referring to. When the government introduced it, everybody started making crisis plans, what will happen if we get if it gets passed. And of course, everybody was doing that, but we were also conscious that planning and replanning and replanning and replanning for a crisis drains a lot of resources, a lot of capacities. So what we did is to be aware of this, we organized mental health support, psychological support for the team who is most affected, and also choose the fields which we laser focus on. For example, others like Mr. Hathazi, for example, was organizing these weekly protests, which was amazing to like keep the topic, you know, in the discussion. But because many others were doing this protest, we purposefully decided, and you know, some say this is controversial, that we will not do this protest as well because others are already doing it. We will put all on our focus on the Pride March, on international advocacy, on local advocacy, and on fundraising and on convincing the people. And you know, sometimes you need to make hard decision what to focus on, what to not. But you know, my team is just 5 people and the rest are volunteers, so we had to make these hard decisions. And on the communication side, from the beginning we framed this law as an attack on freedom of assembly, because the reasoning was very, very vague. The reasoning in the law was referring to the 2021 so-called Child Protection Law, the anti-LGBT propaganda law, saying that if a protest portrays these banned topics, then the protest should be banned. But the description of those topics is already, wait, what is even mentioning or promoting homosexuality? Am I promoting homosexuality? Well, probably, but that's beyond the question. So, we framed it as if this protest can be banned, any other protest can be banned. You know, what if Viktor Orban says that, oh, that one speaker at that one protest was cursing on stage, for example? I can claim that's also harmful for children, so the protests have to be banned. Or somebody had a dirty word on their sign at the protest. Like, it is so vague. And I think this really struck a chord with the majority. And they said that banning the pride is just the first step in a direction we don't want to go in. Many people lived before 1989, do you remember what it was like to have banned protests, or when you couldn't form a civil society organization, you could only form youth organizations, and you have to, find these loopholes. And I am very concerned that many people just don't want to relive that. So that was our main strategy. And if you look at our show, what we put on stage, we had two major elements. One, that we had to keep it queer. It was very, very important to us not to water down our own message, to make it palatable for everybody. We had drag shows on stage. We had openly LGBTQ activists on stage. We had the mother of queer children on stage. Of course, the propaganda media is focusing on the drag shows now, thing unexpected. But it was important for us that it is about our community, and we will not censor ourselves just until we get some rights back, and then we become authentic again. This is not an option. If we start silencing people in our own community, it will never work. So it was one part. The other part was to try to attract big masses. And we engaged with celebrities and musicians who are immensely popular in the majority of society. And we put those two things together. And this was the show on stage, but this is kind of reflected in the whole campaign. To show people this is who we are. Some of us, like me, have a wife and three kids. Some of us wear high heels and makeup. This is all of us. And also, these people stand behind us, who you've been loving since you were 5 year old. But of course, this couldn't have happened with like a very, very strong LGBTQ movement building up in the last 30 years. And we also have to be thankful for the activists who came before us, because we already had openly gay and lesbian people on TV talk shows in 1992. So this is all part of a bigger picture, but we, try to do our part right.
Amazing. I'm so grateful for this answer, because I think that you answered so many questions and thoughts and that are going around in many activists' minds when speaking about this and how to build a movement. So really well done, and thank you so much for sharing that also very important insight to all of us. It's fantastic. And I think it's interesting. So I'm holding out the book again. Today is my book day. But it's interesting, right? Because this is connected, the broadness of a movement of nonviolent protest together. Then, if you see your family there, then also, policemen, policewomen, they have families and they might know people in the crowd. If there are 200,000 people, it's quite likely that there are no people in that crowd. And that has an effect on them. So I want to get Akos in here as well. Akos, du hast erzählt, ja auch von der die Repräsentation.
Akos. So Akos, you told us about the start of repressions. So could you tell us what the police did during the protest, and how did you see was that different from earlier protest? Was there a change? I mean, the Minister of the Interior is quite close with Viktor Orban, but what did they did? So that was the question for me. Okay. From the very beginning, when the law was presented, I said, on the one hand, it's good news in part that they are proposing this law, because it shows that the Hungarian police is not that strong, and that the regime does not believe that the police would be able to, would actually side with them during a major protest. They didn't trust that. And we've already earlier heard it that during larger protests, especially when it was protest against the state media, there was a big discussion between the Minister of the Interior and Viktor Orban. So Orban always asked for more violence and more pressure from the police, but the Minister of the Interior kept saying that they're too weak to do that, and the police are just everyday people, common people, they're not happy. They don't make enough money. Their working conditions aren't great. And so the Minister of the Interior kept saying we have to avoid violence. And another thing you should know, the last government was weakened, and then we had protests from the opposition, and these were violently oppressed. And Fidesz policy is based on that myth that the socialists are violent and that Fidesz is very different from that, is not violent. But now we can see this Pride law is just a technical law. And just one more thing. I've heard it several times from ordinary police, men and women, during our protests with just 1 or 2,000 protesters. They told me, okay, you have to be 50,000 people, because if you have 50,000 people on the street, then we will march with you. But if it's just a few of you, we have to do our job, unfortunately. So we've seen now that the police were rather mild. I mean, what could they have done against 200,000 people? It was clear 200, 250,000 people, and they're only 1,000 in the police force. What could they have done realistically? But the bigger question now is, what will they do next week with their Chinese facial recognition cameras? Will they use them in the future? And I've had a look. These are the state-of-the-art cameras from China. They have been installed on lorries, and they did use them. And now we're going to see how many people are going to be sanctioned. So that's the question now. What will be the consequences? It is a technical law. The regime wanted to avoid major protests, but not just this one, but repeated major protests, because in case of an election fraud, you can be certain that we'll have another 200,000 people on the street protesting. And then if 2 days later, 50,000 of them have a penalty to pay, then it's quite likely that the next day it'll only be 180,000, then not 200,000 going back to protest. Then in the third, fourth, or fifth day, even fewer. So that's what they want to achieve, a non-violent way to find a non-violent way to prevent repeated protests. So they are very afraid of the word Maidan. Maidan, that's the large square in Kiev in the Ukraine, where for months thousands of people were protesting against the government. And this regime, our regime, is very afraid of that, or the Serbian-style protests that we're having now. And so that's why I can't really say what the police is going to do. We'll see over the next few weeks. But Europe and the Hungarian opposition have to be very careful with this. So thank you. We have another 10 minutes. And I would like to ask my last question, but I've already hinted at it. It's a question that many people have already mentioned. So there are two levels here. My camera wasn't working for second there. So what can we do over the next weeks to support Hungary, to support the democratic movement in Hungary, the LGBTQ community? What can we do? So that is my first question. And then the second point, what can everybody do in our own countries? So pressure on our own government. So what can we do for Hungary, and how can we support the movement by pressuring our own governments? Everyone has 2 minutes, 1 minute per question. We're just going to do a last round and then we'll finish. I think it's going to be very interesting. So Daniel first, please.
Also ich glaube, das allererste, was man machen kann, Victoria hat das ja eben schon so ein bisschen angedeutet, dass Unternehmen...
Well, Victoria already mentioned that the first thing you can do is that we all who have a little bit of money available, we could support the organizers. We've heard that the companies gave up sponsoring the Pride. And this is something I think which would really be extremely helpful. Then the second thing we can do is to remain alert. That we're all here tonight is a good sign, that we all look towards Hungary, wonder what is happening there, we, the Democrats, the Europeans, so that we stand together in the end. That is the important thing. And you can thank you can register with Max for the newsletter if you haven't done it yet, and you can also get informed through my posts about Hungary and the fundamental rights there. And what we are going to do in the European Parliament is exactly that. We are going to put more pressure, continuous pressure, on the member states and the Commission, so that these legal acts will be abolished, that there are infringement procedures. We have the plenary in Strasbourg next week and have it already on the agenda. The Pride and all the consequences of it will be discussed in the European Parliament. We will keep it in our focus. Thank you. And now I would...
Yes, thank you so much. Yes, I think such talks like what we do now is a great thing. And also because Hungary is isolated very much from the EU. This is Orbán's narrative that the EU is bad. We have smear campaigns against the Commission president. So I think all these contacts that you come to visit, for example, the Pride, or there are some talks, some exchanges with EU, between other EU member states and Hungary, I think it all helps a great deal, and to support the civil society and in a free media, and for the Hungarians not to be afraid. That's be brave and go out, and we have to keep up to it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Akos, please. I would suggest, recommend that Europe should continue to not forget Hungary and the situation in Hungary, but not only in order to help Hungary, but also to help Europe. This, I think, is the important thing, because the political system in Hungary is very contagious. In Hungary, we also have to understand that the solution cannot come from Europe. Only we can be the solution. Only in Hungary can solutions be found. But we can expect from Europe that Europe does not hurt Hungary, because if they continue to send the money to Orbán without control, that would really damage Hungary, because the whole political system is upheld by Orbán through this money. And as to the oligarchs, we've heard about the oligarchs and today, and we heard that about 3 billion euros of European money went directly to the oligarchs. So it is very important that this money goes to the small activists, the small mayors. Europe cannot do a lot, that is true, but it's very important that they don't hurt us. But we have to find the solution in Hungary itself. Thank you very much. Victoria, please.
Yes, thank you, everybody. And thank you, Daniel, for bringing up the donations. We are still collecting donations to pay for the Pride March, which, you know, costs like 3 to 4 times the normal Pride March for us. So we need every bit of help we can get. I would also draw the attention to the fact that the European Commission is the only entity who has the mandate and all the legal tools to stop this Pride ban like tomorrow. They missed their first opportunity for an interim measure when the law was passed. They missed their second opportunity when the Advocate General provided its opinion that this law is in breach of Article 2. It is a very, very important decision and has to be taken seriously. Now we are after the Pride March and criminal investigations are already starting. This is the third opportunity for the Commission, and it is a very, very simple procedure. We already have a very developed infringement procedure in the case of the 2021 propaganda law. The easiest way to do it is to request an interim measure in that case, because if the 2021 propaganda law gets suspended, the whole Pride ban gets suspended. And we need to do it to prevent from other countries from going through the same thing as we do. And this is what you can push for a European Parliament level and also on government level in bilateral relations. Because every other autocrat is looking at Orbán right now and looking at can we get away with a Pride ban? And if they know that you know, the local community doesn't have a very supportive mayor they could rely on, and also local regulations vary a lot, they get a free pass for a Pride ban. And we all know that restriction on the fundamental rights of minorities and corruption always go hand in hand. One is always covering up the other. So this is something that needs to be taken very, very seriously. I am sharing one of Ilga Europe's statements on the Advocate General's opinion. Please share this. These opinions, we are working very, very hard with local and international human rights NGOs. We are doing way beyond what our capacities are to stop this law, but we need EU institutions to fill their mandate and just do their job. We don't ask for more, just to fill their mandate. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much to you all. And I'd like to say two things we haven't mentioned yet. I think what the EU could do when talking about regulations of social media platforms and algorithms, I think there they could intervene. We have social media which are used by media for hate speech and everything. It is not a fair space anymore, and the Commission with von der Leyen has to act. It cannot continue like this. Also, as to the elections which are forthcoming, it's important that we do something here. And if now people are punished, then there is not much hope left. So we have to keep the pressure up. And I think also from a German, but also from a European viewpoint, that it's important, very important, that the LGBTQI community is supported everywhere in Europe, that we are solidary everywhere in Europe. Because it is, as you said, it's this intimidation, this dehumanization. We take the weakest group, or the group of which we think that it's the weakest. Well, that's what the autocrats like Trump say. It's with them that we begin to make an example, and we see it, we know it from autocrats everywhere, that this is the way they go. Therefore, it's very important that we are attentive also to things like the gay pride, even if we don't feel directly concerned by it. It's a very important movement, and it concerns everybody. In the world. If we stand together, we cannot be intimidated or defeated that easily. This is something I wanted to say. And in 2 weeks, we are having a Europe calling on the digital platforms. And the minister from North Rhine-Westphalia will be here, Alexandra Gese. On Monday, we're going to speak about the USA, the GIGAs, and the methane emissions and what the administration is doing on it. And we're also talking about vulnerable communities in this respect. So the battle continues also here at Europol Calling. I would like to thank you all. Good that you could react at such short notice. And we all will still look towards Hungary. We'll remain focused on it. Thank you. Thank you, all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. Bye bye.